You know, this morning I'm going to sort of wrap up this season that we've been in, and I hope that this morning will illustrate for you the power of a transformed life. And that's really the topic of today. And I really, you know, hope that story will engage it for you. This morning, you know, I don't know what your journey will be by the end of the morning either. But I want to just open with a simple word of prayer before we go into this theme of living a transformed life. And hope that your heart might be open. God, I thank you that you are the giver of life, whether we have ever fully recognized it or not. And I thank you that you are a God who pursues us with a father's heart, and that you invite us in turn to live a transformed life. This morning is the heritage of that transformed life. You might remember, and I'll recap really quickly as a closure to this, that the definition we used of a transformed life is this: a complete change in the appearance or the character of something or someone, especially so that that thing or person is improved. So there's an improvement in that. And then we said this, that transformation takes time and willingness. Anyone who goes through any type of transformation knows this. It takes time and it takes willingness. It's something that we give ourselves to. And we looked at these seven areas of life, the six in blue. We looked at physical transformation, emotional, mental, relational, financial, vocational, all included and embodied in this spiritual transformation. A transformed spirit will in turn affect every other area of life. Most of us truly, if we thought about it, we could write a program or set a series of goals to transform an area of life that we see need in. In fact, if you were part of that home group series, you were one of those that was going through this, you would have found that little space right at the beginning that we could put in there our three-month goals in these areas. Like, what do we want to see change in? How do we want to see change? And the world that we live in, we can pretty much go to someone who is going to give us assistance in that area. Where we live, we have access to so much. You can go and find a life coach. You can go and find a financial planner, a counselor. You can visit a psychologist. You can go to an educator. You can go and find a personal trainer. All of those areas, those six areas surrounded by that spiritual, we can find someone who will help us, who will give us direction, who will give us keys, who will give us tools. And I've met heaps of people who have made valiant, courageous, transformational changes in their lives. And they've changed the course of their life through decision and commitment. People who have decided along the way, I'm not content where I've been. I'm not content with who I am. I'm not content with the way things look like they're going to go. It can come through really confronting life circumstances, but we look at it and go, I can't keep doing it this way. And so we make a decision and then we make this commitment, and people I've seen have stuck to this commitment. Learned new skills, they've upskilled themselves. People who have overcome deep hurts, who have walked in forgiveness. People who have recovered from damaging experiences. People who have had to rebuild financially. People who have chosen to walk in restored relationships. People who have reshaped their bodies, who have completely redefined the way that they approach life. Truly amazing and great decisions. deep commitment, fully worthy of honor and celebrating. People who do that, I find so inspirational, and I look for stories of inspiration. But there's an area that we cannot do in our own strength. That whole encompassing area of the spiritual is not transformed by program. It's not transformed by disciplines. It doesn't come from just attending meetings or doing study. Transformation in our spirit is this internal work, and it doesn't matter how much we work on all the others. There's this one area that we cannot transform on our own. Let me tell you a story of a man who shaped my life. And a moment that I had the privilege to witness where a deep transformational work took hold of my dad. And I also now live out of that real transformation. My dad, he's an Englishman by birth, born just prior to the Second World War, born in Gravesend in London, down in the dock district on the edge of the Thames. As the Second World War began and London was under threat, he was one of the thousands and thousands of children who were shipped out to the country, not knowing if and what they would return to. He was a young man who was shipped off two different times. One time to grandparents who were very, very harsh and very, very staid Victorian. And my dad recounts it as some of the most painful seasons of his life. And in ways, it shaped him. He had a father who was a solicitor, and he grew up under this expectation of being measured by words and opinion. My dad, he became a minister in the Church of England. The Church of England minister was the robes, the black cassock, or the black suit, the white collar. And I grew up, that was what my dad wore. And that's sort of the position I saw my dad in. We were the kids in the little church that, yes, you mow the lawn, and yes, you do the dusting, and yes, you take care of the venue. And that was sort of our responsibility growing up, but somewhere along the line, it just became foreign. It kind of became my dad's thing, and I watched my dad do it, and I would attend the meetings, and I would do the stuff, but there was not really life in my spirit. My dad became a father by choice. He wanted his children. I'm one of four sons. But my dad became a transformational influence in my life and the lives of others because of the transformational experience of his own. My dad wasn't perfect. My dad, when I was growing up, was sometimes a harsh man, a man who got angry, a man who wasn't afraid to give us a hiding. And I received a hiding, I remember, one evening, and it was unjust. It wasn't my fault. It actually was my brother's fault. Usually was mine, but this time genuinely was my brother's fault, and I copped it, and I copped a beating, and I remember going to bed sad. And it's funny, those things that you have as these memories. And I remember my dad worked a lot. He took his role seriously. But I think sometimes that work and the care of people could make us feel distant. But there was a moment there was a moment that I happened to walk in on. There was a moment on the floor of the living room of 65 Rosa Street, Oatley, an outer suburb of Sydney. And I came home one afternoon, late 70s, and as I came through the front door, I walked into the living room. I just came through the door. And I saw my father from behind. And I remember seeing his Bible open on the floor. I still picture it, to the left of him. And I remember seeing this record over his shoulder to the right-hand side of him. And I could hear a song playing, and I watched his shoulders shake as he wept under the weight of the words of this song.
I don't care how many buses you own or the size of your sanctuary. It doesn't matter how steep your steeple is if it's sitting on a cemetery. I don't care if you pave your parking lot or put pads upon your pews. What good is a picture-perfect stage if you're missing all the cues? I don't care if your pastor is super-powered and your program's always new. What you need is love and truth, and men are gonna come to you. It doesn't matter that you know the Bible, if it's all just in your head. The thing I need to ask you is, have you done the things I said? Do you love your wife? For her and for your children, are you laying down your life? What about the others? As a servant to your sisters and your brothers, do you make the poor man beg you for a bone? Do the widow and the orphan cry alone? I don't care if you pray for miracles, don't care if you speak with tongues. I don't care if you've said you love me in every song you've sung. It doesn't matter that your sacrifice of praise is loud enough to raise the dead. The thing I need to ask you is, have you done the things I said? Do you love your wife? With all you've got inside you, are you laying down your life? What about the others? Are you living as a servant to your sisters and your brothers? Do you make the poor man beg you for a bone? Do the widow and the orphan cry alone? Lord, when were you a prisoner that we did not come to you? When was it that we saw you sick that we didn't follow through? Every time you turned your head and pretended not to see, when you did it not to the least of these, you did it not to me.
And I watched a man who allowed for a moment the Spirit of God to make an inquiry of the depths of his own heart. I witnessed a man really allowing God to ask questions of his own life. I watched a man who in this moment faced it honestly and faced it humbly, and he allowed Jesus to begin this deep work that shaped his future and shaped our futures. And I watched a journey of transformation. A man who had been devoted, a man who was devout, a man who was disciplined, a man who was committed, who allowed this transformational inquiry of the Spirit of God begin to work in him. You see, a life transformed really reveals the transformed story. What is it at the heart of our stories of change? But deeper than that, who is at the heart of our story of change? Is it motivated by just me? I just change for me. I just see the need in me and I do it for me. Or is it external? Is it family? Man, my kids are going to need me around longer. I need to change. Man, our kids are going to need an inheritance. I need to do something financially. What is it? What's the motivation? Because so many things can motivate us. But that's spiritual transformation. You see, a life transformed by Jesus reveals Jesus. It doesn't just reveal formula. Like if I go through physical transformation, I can give someone my workout schedule. If I change my life financially, I can give someone else a handbook to financial stability and health. I can introduce people to my psychologist or my counselor. I can do all sorts of things. But if a life's transformed by Jesus, I can't just tell them about meetings at a church. A life transformed by Jesus reveals Jesus. It's not to be hidden away. It's not just this secret thing. We'll share anything else, but do people see Jesus? Matthew chapter 5, 14 through 16, Jesus actually says it like this, and I'm reading from a translation of the Bible called The Message. Jesus says this, here's another way to put it. You're here to be light. You're here to bring out the God colors in the world. God is not a secret to be kept. We're going public with this. Public like a city on a hill. If I make you light bearers, you don't think I'm going to hide you under a bucket, do you? I'm putting you on a light stand. Now that I've put you on a hilltop, on a light stand, shine. Keep open house. Be generous with your lives. Open up to others. You'll prompt people to open up with God, the generous Father in heaven. And you know, I grew up with this sort of foreign idea of Jesus. The Jesus that I read about, I liked the stories of Jesus, but it felt so distant. I remember this story of Jesus. I read it in my children's Bible and had the images, Jesus as a shepherd. But the image always felt distant to me. I liked the idea of a shepherd who led people by still waters and let them rest in green pastures. I loved the idea of this shepherd that so cared for his sheep that he would leave 99 on a hillside to go and find that one who had wandered off. I used to love that, but it still felt so distant, this shepherd in lovely, clean garments. I don't know where a shepherd like that washes his clothes every day. Always felt sort of messier, the places that he would go. But then one day as I was reviewing my own life and my own decision to follow Jesus, I was reading that story of the shepherd again. And suddenly I was like, I've seen that guy. I've seen that shepherd. I've seen the one who will leave his 99 to go after that one who has strayed. You see, in my later teens, I chose this wild side of life. We were too young to consume alcohol like we did, but my brothers and I and our friends, we took to that for whatever reason. And one night, I don't remember why, and I don't exactly remember where, but I would later discover that I was passed out on the front lawn of one of my dad's parishioners' house. And I remember waking up to a firm hand on the back of my collar, lifting me to my feet, assisting me to the car, and I realize it's my dad. And someone has called him and asked if he would remove his son from their front lawn. And then I saw my dad walk off in the headlights. I'll never forget the image because he came walking back into the headlights from a little further down the street with my mate Kempy over his shoulders. And he carried him. And he put him in the car. And he drove him home, and all the way I can just hear Kempy swearing just violently and vilely at my dad. He has no idea whose shoulder he's on. And the next day, Kempy comes up to our place, no pun intended, sheepishly. And he just says to my dad, "Mr. Lovell, I'm sorry." And I remember my dad said something along the lines of, "Boys, there is a better way to do life." And then when I read about a shepherd, I've seen that shepherd. I've seen one who would leave his 99 and go after the ones that are strayed and carry him back to a car and put him in bed. I used to fear Jesus as a judge. Shame plagued me. I didn't make a lot of great decisions in my young and mid-teenage years. I just didn't. And I'd already read the story of Jesus with an adulterous woman. And I like the story. I like that Jesus, when everyone else is accusing this woman that is being dragged before him, he's the one that leans into her and he's the one that gets down in that dirt and identifies with her and then begins to send the accusers away. I'm like, man, I like that idea of Jesus, but how am I ever going to meet that Jesus? Because number one, I'm not a woman. And it can feel so distant, but so inviting. And then I realize a few years later, as I'm reading it again, I've seen that Jesus. You see, I, in those years, made bad decisions and ended up being arrested on television, Channel 10 Evening News. When I got released on a self-signed bail that evening, I rang home and lied about where I'd been. And my dad on the phone says, "Tim, it's already been on the news." It was a long train ride home. But when I walked into my house, expecting my dad in his black suit and white collar, I walked into that house and my dad is sitting at the corner of our dining room table with a chair pulled out for me. And as I walked in, he takes his white collar off and he put it on the table. And he said to me, "Tim, I'm not your judge or your priest. I'm in this as your dad." And when I see Jesus leaning into this woman that is being dragged under accusation, I see that Jesus, because I got a dad who willingly lived out his transformed journey. And a transformed life will leave a transformed legacy. transformed life will leave a transformed legacy. My dad, he now lives confined to a bed. He'll never get up, he'll never walk again. He lives in a locked ward in a care facility. But I had the privilege of going down and visiting him a couple of weeks ago for his 87th birthday. And though he is fading in many ways, he chose to lead us in a prayer as we were going to eat lunch. All he wanted that day was chicken, sausages, a carrot cake, and whiskey. But as he prayed the most profound prayer of gratitude. He thanked God for his grace, for his kindness, for his goodness, that he's never left him, that he's never failed him, he's never forsaken him. My dad thanks God every day for the place that he does get to live. I've never heard in all of his years where it's been very difficult, I've never heard him complain. I've never seen him gripe. And I live in this legacy. I want to read to you from 2 Corinthians chapter 4, 16 through 18. It says this, "Therefore, we do not lose heart. Though outwardly we are wasting away, yet inwardly we are renewed day by day." That is the transforming work. It doesn't matter what happens on the outside. On the inside, we are renewed day by day. For our light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all. So we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but on what is unseen. And since what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal. My dad, we got to celebrate his birthday. Three of those four sons, we got to share it with him. We got to toast him. And the grandchildren who live on this side of the globe all got to gather around him and sit in that legacy, to hear that heart, to hear that faith. And when I look at that picture of all those kids and grandkids, amongst them are kids who are really changing nations. There are kids who are dreaming. There are kids who are studying. There are kids who are sportsmen. There are kids who want influence and want a voice. Not to just brag, but three of his grandkids, they're all from my brother's family, not mine. All were school captains. You just look at it, and they're all walking in a very simple faith in Jesus because of a transformed life that revealed a transformed story, that revealed the source of that story, which was Jesus. Jesus who carried stray sheep home. Jesus who sat with the broken and the rejected and the judged. Jesus who walked in grace and forgiveness. Though the outward perishes, the inward man is renewed day by day. The legacy of a transformed life, what legacy will we choose to leave? What legacy will our life speak? We all will live a story, and I wonder what that story will tell. And so a transformed life, it will reveal that transformed story, and a transformed life will leave a transformed legacy. The question really that we have to face with all those other things that we can do, are we going to allow God to do what only He can do? And that is to transform a spirit, to shape us in the deepest of places, And what does it take? It takes time and willingness. The time is at hand. It's the now. Are we willing to allow His inquiry of our hearts, as I watched a man do so many years ago? And then will we walk the journey over time as that work is worked in us? This morning, I don't know where your journey is. Some of you have walked this road. Some of you know that transformation, but some of us are still trying to work it out and make it fit. God is a God of love and grace, of kindness and mercy, who invites you to know Him and invites us to come to Him and be restored by Him. It's almost like He sits there at the corner of that table waiting for us, because we expect to come into a room with Him in a collar or Him in a cassock or some robe, but He sits there and He just takes that off and puts it and He goes, I'm not here as your judge. I'm not here as your priest. I'm here as your Father. And the question is whether we will respond to Him in that role. I'm going to close in a simple word of prayer. Prayer to me is expressing my thoughts or words, trusting that there's a God who hears me. And if He hears me, He's going to answer me. And if you want to this morning, you can echo those prayers in your own heart, make them your own. But I just want to say, God, thank you. Though you're a God of all power, of all justice, of all knowledge, of all wisdom, I want to thank you that you're also a God of incredible grace and forgiveness. That you are not content that we live just self-indulgent, self-approving lives. You want us to know your heart for us too. And so again, God, I choose to humble myself before you. I ask your forgiveness for any place that I have strayed from your way and your will, where I've been self-serving. And I just ask that you would have your way in me. And God, I just pray for those of us that we've come to that place of accepting your work, but then somehow we get off course and we think it's about all the stuff we do for you. And God, would you just quiet us again, that we would find rest afresh in your kindness, your mercy, your goodness, knowing that there's no shame, that there's no guilt that you are not capable of restoring us from. And I just really want to say thanks that you've invited us to know you as a good Father. Continue your transforming work in us, I pray, and through us, that our transformed story would tell a transforming story. Thanks. Amen. I really thank you for your willingness to listen to a story of life. And I hope that it might be life-giving to you in some way today. I really mean that. If you're a guest with us, you've come as a part of Father's Day, or you've come at my stray invitation, I just really am so grateful that you'd take the time to be a part of this. We are going into a series ahead of us called Choices. And that really, if you saw the image come up before, and we'll bring it up again, this image is a two-part image. There is a color bit on top and a real gray scale bit at the bottom under the word choices. And it's really with this idea that we will choose how we will live, either in this gray scale, pale world, or we will live in the fullness of the light and life, but it will come at our choice. And so there is a series of weeks that we're going to talk about the choices we have, and when we walk in them, the beauty and the color that we will discover in a transformed church. And so I hope that you'll connect with that over the coming weeks and that you'll engage those choices that we have. But my hope is today that you'll go in peace and expectation and joy, and God bless you and keep you. Amen.